Hey there, welcome back for another deep dive.
Always exciting.
Today we're doing something pretty unique.
Oh.
Yeah, we're going to be exploring a collection of doctoral theses,
Okay.
all from the Universidad del País Vasco's Faculty of Psychology.
Interesting.
And get this.
Yeah.
They were all supervised by the same professor, Professor Mate Garay Gordabil.
That's right.
So it's like we're getting a guided tour of a specific academic lineage.
Yeah.
Like a focused look at how research interests and methodologies can be shaped by a single mentor.
Exactly.
And we've got a pretty hefty stack here.
Oh, wow.
19 theses in total.
Wow.
I was already skimming through some of them. And let me tell you,
yeah,
some really interesting themes jumped out at me.
I bet just glancing into titles, it's clear that bullying is a major focus area.
Oh, absolutely.
And Professor Gargordobiel's work.
Multiple theses tackle this issue head on.
Yeah.
For example, one study.
Okay.
This is from Martinez Valderay's 2014 thesis. Found that school-based interventions that focused on building empathy, particularly in early childhood,
right,
had a noticeable impact on reducing bullying incidents later on in adolescence.
That's a crucial finding.
Really?
Because it suggests that early intervention can be incredibly effective.
Mm.
And it speaks to the importance of addressing bullying not just as a behavioral issue,
right,
but as a social and emotional learning challenge.
You know, as someone who remembers the ups and downs of middle school.
Yeah.
All too well.
I hear you.
I think those early social emotional skills are so crucial.
Absolutely.
I wish my school had focused more on things like empathy training back then.
I think a lot of us can relate to that.
Yeah.
And it highlights the real world impact of this kind of research.
Yeah.
It's not just theoretical. It's informing practical strategies for creating safer and more supportive learning environments.
Absolutely. And speaking of adolescence, it seems like that's another major thread.
Yeah.
Running through many of these theses.
Interesting.
And we just look at these titles.
Okay.
Adolescent habits and their relationship with family functioning.
Mm.
The influence of online social networks on adolescent identity.
Right.
Emotional intelligence, and its role in adolescent psychological well-being.
Mm.
It's like Professor Garay Gordabil and her students are really trying to unpack the complexities of this developmental stage.
And rightfully so. Adolescence is a period of such rapid change,
yeah,
physically, emotionally, socially.
Right.
It's a time when many mental health challenges first emerge.
Wow.
And when young people are particularly vulnerable to peer pressure and social influences.
I see.
So understanding these dynamics is essential for supporting healthy development and well-being.
What really caught my eye was Pinya Sarinandia's 2015 thesis on emotional intelligence.
Oh, interesting.
You know, it's not a concept we always associate with teenagers.
Sure.
But the research suggests that helping young people develop those emotional regulation skills can have a huge impact on their resilience, their relationships, even their academic success.
That's a fascinating area of study, and it connects to a broader trend we're seeing in psychology.
Mm-hmm.
A move away from solely focusing on mental illness to understanding and promoting mental wellness.
Okay.
And these theses really exemplify that shift.
It's like they're saying, let's not just wait for problems to arise. Let's equip young people with the tools they need to thrive.
Exactly. And that's where the research on bullying and the focus on emotional intelligence converge.
Mm.
If we can teach kids to understand and manage their own emotions and to empathize with others,
right,
we can create a more positive and supportive social environment where bullying is less likely to occur.
Makes total sense. But it's not all about adolescence.
Right. Okay.
We also have some theses that dive into specific psychological conditions.
Yes. For instance, Govier Garmendia's 2011 thesis examines the efficacy of cognitive behavioral therapy for managing chronic pain in individuals with fibromyalgia.
Interesting. And that's an area where psychological interventions can make a huge difference. After all, fibromyalgia is a condition that involves both physical and psychological components.
Right.
And addressing the emotional and cognitive aspects of pain management is crucial.
That's precisely what Goviard Garmendia explores.
Yeah.
Her research delved into specific cognitive and behavioral techniques like relaxation training and activity pacing.
I see.
And found that these strategies can significantly improve pain levels and overall quality of life for individuals with fibromyalgia.
So it's not just about medication. It's about empowering people to actively manage their condition.
Exactly.
And regain a sense of control.
Absolutely. Now, while a lot of these theses deal with some heavy topics like bullying and chronic pain,
yeah,
there are also a few that explore some unexpected and delightful areas.
You're telling me I was particularly intrigued by Perez Fernandez's 2001 thesis on the impact of art education on child development.
Oh, wow.
It seemed like a bit of an outlier at first. When you think about it, art can be such a powerful tool for expression, communication, and emotional regulation.
Precisely. And Perez Fernandez's research found some really compelling evidence to support that.
Oh, really?
He looked at the effects of a structured art education program on preschoolers and found that those who participated showed significant improvements in their creativity, problem-solving skills, and even their social-emotional development.
It's amazing to think that something as seemingly simple as art can have such a profound impact on young minds.
It really speaks to the interconnectedness of different developmental domains. Art isn't just about aesthetics. It's about fostering cognitive flexibility, encouraging self-expression, and building those all-important social-emotional skills that we've been talking about.
And it makes you wonder about the potential applications of this research. I mean, imagine if every school had a robust art program that focused not just on technical skills, but on nurturing those deeper cognitive and emotional benefits.
That's a powerful vision, and it highlights the potential of this research to inform educational practices and create more enriching learning environments for all children.
It really is inspiring to see such a diverse range of research coming from one university department under the guidance of a single mentor.
Well, that brings us to the intriguing question of mentorship.
Okay.
What kind of impact does a single guiding hand have on the direction and scope of research?
That's a question we're going to be diving into in part two of this deep dive.
Sounds good.
Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back after a quick break.
Welcome back.
Yeah.
Before the break, we were just starting to talk about the role of mentorship in shaping research, and it's a fascinating aspect of this collection of theses.
Yeah.
Having one Professor Gary Gordabil guiding so many doctoral students,
right?
Like, her influence is woven throughout my studies.
Yeah, it's like we're seeing a microcosm of her own intellectual journey reflected in the work of her students.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think there are any potential downsides, though, to such a strong single mentor influence?
That's a really insightful question.
Yeah.
While there are clear benefits to this kind of focused mentorship, like creating a cohesive research group with shared expertise, and maybe even fostering deeper collaboration, it does raise the question of diversity of thought.
Exactly. I mean, could it potentially limit the range of research questions being explored?
Yeah, that's a good point.
It's like having a garden with only one type of flower, even if it's a really beautiful flower.
I see what you mean. And that's a valid concern when we think about academic research in general.
Right.
We want a vibrant ecosystem of ideas, different perspectives, challenging and enriching one another.
But even within this collection, we are seeing a pretty impressive range of topics, right?
That's true.
We've got bullying, emotional intelligence, adolescent online behavior, the impact of art education, even clinical psychology, with a focus on things like fibromyalgia and eating disorders.
And I think it speaks to Professor Gary Gordabil's ability to nurture her students' individual interests while still maintaining a clear focus on psychological well-being. You'll notice that most, if not all, of these theses ultimately aim to understand and improve people's lives.
I think that's what makes this collection so compelling, honestly.
Yeah.
It's rigorous academic research.
Uh-huh.
But with a clear human-centered approach.
Absolutely. And that's something that often gets lost in discussions about academia, isn't it?
Yeah.
The idea that research is about more than just publishing papers.
Right.
It's about generating knowledge that can have a real positive impact on the world.
Speaking of real-world impact,
yeah.
Let's talk about some specific examples of how these theses might be applied.
Okay.
I mean, what are some of the potential takeaways for our listeners?
Well, let's take the research on bullying.
Okay.
You mentioned earlier that Martinez Valderay's thesis found that early interventions focused on empathy were effective in reducing bullying. This finding could inform the development of school-based programs designed to promote social and emotional learning.
Imagine if every elementary school had a curriculum that specifically taught kids how to recognize and understand their own emotions and the emotions of others.
Yeah.
It could create a completely different social dynamic.
Exactly. It could create a culture of empathy and respect where bullying becomes much less of an issue.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not just about schools. Parents, educators, even community leaders can play a role in fostering these skills in young people.
And what about the research on adolescent emotional intelligence?
Yeah.
I remember being a teenager and it felt like my emotions were on a roller coaster sometimes.
Yes.
If I'd had some tools to help me navigate those ups and downs, it would have made a huge difference.
You're absolutely right. And Panessa and Andia's thesis highlights just how important those emotional regulation skills are for adolescents. Mm. His research suggests that emotional intelligence can impact everything from academic performance to relationships with peers and family members.
So what can parents and educators do to help teens develop those skills?
Well, the research suggests that modeling emotional intelligence ourselves is a great place to start. Being open about our own feelings, talking about how we manage stress and conflict,
right.
All of that can help teens learn by example.
It's about creating a safe space for them to explore and understand their own emotional landscape.
Precisely. And there are also specific programs and interventions designed to teach emotional intelligence skills.
Oh, wow.
Some schools are even incorporating this into their curriculum, which is really encouraging.
Okay, so we've talked about bullying prevention and emotional intelligence.
Mm-hmm.
What about the research on clinical psychology?
Yeah.
How might Goviard-Garmendia's thesis on fibromyalgia be applied in the real world?
Well, her findings support the use of cognitive behavioral therapy, CBT,
okay,
as an effective treatment for managing chronic pain.
Uh-huh.
This means that individuals with fibromyalgia can benefit from learning specific techniques to reframe their thoughts and behaviors around pain,
right,
ultimately reducing their suffering and improving their quality of life.
So it's about empowering people to become active participants in their own healing process.
Exactly. CBT isn't about magically erasing pain. It's about giving people the tools to manage it more effectively.
And this is a message that applies to so many chronic health conditions, isn't it?
It is.
It's about shifting from a mindset of passivity and helplessness to one of agency and control.
You're right. And I think that's a powerful message for all of us, regardless of whether we're dealing with a chronic health condition or not.
Yeah.
Learning to manage our thoughts and behaviors can have a profound impact on our well-being.
And even the thesis on art education has some practical implications, right?
Right.
I mean, it's not just about creating pretty pictures.
Mm-hmm.
It's about nurturing creativity, problem-solving skills, and even social-emotional development.
Precisely. Perez Fernandez's research suggests that art can be a valuable tool for supporting child development in a holistic way.
Okay.
This means that parents, educators, and policymakers should prioritize access to art education for all children, recognizing its potential to foster well-rounded individuals.
So it's not just an extracurricular activity. It's an integral part of a well-rounded education.
Absolutely. And it highlights the importance of recognizing the diverse ways in which children learn and grow.
Mm.
Art provides a unique avenue for self-expression, exploration, and connection with the world around them.
I'm starting to think that we should rename this episode "The Power of Doctoral Research to Change the World."
I like that, and I think it perfectly encapsulates the message we're trying to convey.
Yeah.
These theses aren't just academic exercises. They're springboards for positive change.
And that's what makes this deep dive so rewarding,
right? Yep.
We're not just summarizing research. We're exploring its potential to make a real difference in people's lives.
Exactly. And I think it's a reminder that knowledge is most valuable when it's applied.
Uh-huh.
These theses are full of insights that can help us create a better world for ourselves, for our children, and for future generations.
It's a powerful message, and I hope our listeners are feeling inspired to take what they've learned and put it into action.
Me too, and I think the best place to start is with ourselves.
Okay.
What small changes can we make in our own lives, in our families, in our communities to embody the principles and insights we've discussed today?
That's a great challenge and one that I hope our listeners will take to heart. But before we wrap up, we have one more thesis to explore.
Yeah.
One that I think will really surprise you.
Oh, I'm intrigued. Do tell.
Well, this one delves into the world of online gaming and its impact on adolescent social development.
Mm.
It's a topic that often gets a bad rap. But this research takes a more nuanced approach,
okay,
exploring both the potential benefits and risks of online gaming.
That's fascinating. I can't wait to hear more.
You'll have to wait until part three for the full scoop. We'll be back after a quick break to delve into the world of virtual worlds and teenage brains.
All right, we are back and ready to dive into a topic,
okay,
that I think will resonate with anyone who's ever spent hours exploring a virtual world.
Online gaming.
Yeah.
Remember those marathon sessions?
Oh, yeah.
Of whatever game was popular back then?
I definitely remember those days.
It seems like for today's teenagers, online gaming is even more integrated into their social lives.
Yeah, it is.
Which is exactly what makes this next thesis so fascinating.
Right.
You're talking about Perez Fernandez's 2017 work, right?
Yeah.
Online gaming and adolescent social development. exploring the impact on social skills, relationships, and well-being.
Mm-hmm.
I have to admit, when I first saw this title,
yeah,
I thought, here we go, another study demonizing video games.
I know, right?
But I was pleasantly surprised.
Me too. What's refreshing about this thesis is that it takes a balanced approach.
Okay.
It acknowledges the potential risks that have been highlighted in the media, things like internet addiction, social isolation, exposure to inappropriate content.
Right.
But it also delves into the potential benefits of online gaming.
And what are some of those potential benefits? Yeah. Because I'll be honest, as a non-gamer, it's not something I've really considered.
Well, think about it this way.
Okay.
Online games often require players to work together in teams, strategize, communicate effectively, and even take on leadership roles.
Mm.
These are all valuable social skills that can translate into real-world settings.
So it's like a training ground for collaboration and problem solving.
Yeah.
But in a fun and engaging way.
Exactly. And some studies have shown that online gaming can actually help shy or introverted teens develop their social confidence.
Right.
And build friendships.
Interesting.
It can provide a safe space to practice social interaction and connect with like-minded individuals.
That's really interesting. It challenges the stereotype
yeah.
of the lonely gamer holed up in their room,
uh-huh.
cut off from the real world.
It does. And I think it's important to remember that, like, any form of technology, online gaming, isn't inherently good or bad.
Right.
It's all about how it's used and the context surrounding it.
So what are some of the key takeaways from this thesis? What should parents and educators keep in mind when it comes to online gaming?
I think one of the biggest takeaways is the importance of balance.
Okay.
Like anything else, moderation is key. Encouraging teens to engage in other activities, both online and offline,
right.
can help prevent excessive gaming and promote a well-rounded lifestyle.
It's about finding that sweet spot where gaming enhances their lives.
Yeah.
Without dominating them.
Exactly. And open communication is crucial.
Hmm.
Instead of simply imposing restrictions, talking to teens about their gaming habits, understanding why they enjoy certain games,
yeah.
and even playing with them occasionally can foster a healthier relationship with technology.
It's about being involved and engaged rather than dismissive or fearful.
Exactly. And it's important to remember that every teen is different.
Yeah.
What might be a healthy level of gaming for one might be excessive for another.
Right.
It's all about individual needs and preferences.
So what's the final verdict?
Hmm.
Are online games a force for good or evil in adolescent development?
I think the answer is more nuanced than a simple good or bad.
Okay.
Like any powerful tool, it has the potential for both positive and negative effects.
Right.
It's up to us as parents, educators, and mentors
uh-huh.
to guide young people towards using this technology in a way that supports their well-being
yeah.
and helps them thrive.
It's a reminder that technology isn't going away. And instead of fearing it,
uh-huh.
we need to learn how to harness its power for good.
I couldn't agree more. And I think this deep dive into these doctoral theses has given us a lot to think about, not just in terms of online gaming,
yeah.
but in terms of the broader landscape of adolescent development and the role of research in informing our understanding of this crucial stage of life.
It's been an incredible journey.
It has.
Exploring the work of Professor Gare Gordebil and her students.
We've covered everything from bullying and emotional intelligence to chronic pain management and the power of art.
And we've seen how research can shed light on complex issues, challenge our assumptions.
And ultimately empower us to make a positive difference in the world.
So to all our listeners out there, we hope you've enjoyed this deep dive as much as we have.
I hope so too.
Remember, knowledge is power, but only when it's put into action.
Right.
So go out there, be curious, keep learning, and use what you've discovered to create positive change in your own lives and the world around you.
Until next time, happy diving.